Well, we're talking about a very special story. It's told in the book City of Secrets. Patrice Chaplin is the author. It's a story that was revealed to her over time, about time. 2003, her on and off again relationship with Jose, a man she first met in 1955, it turns into kind of a confessional as he believes he's dying and tells her more about the secret society with which he had been involved and the details that helped explain where things had always seemed a little mysterious, but she wasn't sure why. And suddenly now, but it's all comes clear to Patrice Chaplin. That's where she starts to write the book, City of Secrets. And I want to get back to Saunier, the Abbey Saunier, who was the man in charge of the Rennes Le Chateau during its explosive growth period, the guy who was bringing secrets into Girona in Spain from France, bringing them into Girona and keeping them there, and with the help of the secret society that Patrice was traveling with. And this is her story, that they, part of what this group did was monitor the time portals that were active in that area, and that people were coming and going in different from different periods of history, all with the hope that someday this information that they were sharing was going to make was going to improve humankind. So we'll just pick up the story coming up there next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. I want to get back to that Salvador Dali story in just a second, but we were talking about Jose earlier, the guy who, the mysterious Jose, who Patrice Chaplin thinks might have come from a different dimension. Did you ever meet Saunier? Did you ever meet, did he ever come?
I'm not that old.
No. I meant, was there a time traveling thing? Was there ever, was there any evidence that he might have come back to with this time portal, as you were talking about it? Why didn't he, do you think?
I know that people have channeled him. Those mediums have actually been able to receive messages or an experience of him. He's a very difficult person to let's say pin down, explain. He was another energy altogether. I was told by the Kabbalists that he was of a high spiritual evolvement, but he fell from grace into darker, more gravitation energy, you know, which would make him into power and the good things of life. Yes, certainly.
So you never, I just would have thought of anybody might have come back to check on his work that he had been storing there with the group. It might have been Saunier, but that's part of what makes the story so fascinating, and you write it very well, is that it's hard to tell exactly what's going on while you're experiencing it, but years later, you're able to sort it out with what Jose was saying. So let's go back to the story of Salvador Dali. So he's bringing some of his big paintings to this train station, where they're sent on to the United States, where he's obviously growing in popularity. And he says to you, this is the center of the universe?
He said, he said it not only to me, said it to many people. He had an experience actually on the platform of that station, which transformed him. He went through a time change. He did an amazing painting of the station. It's called Perpignan Station, and it shows him sliding through different times with a train just behind him. It's quite a menacing and incredibly powerful picture. After that, he became interested in the portals, in transformation, in going into the evil, the fact that this is a dual planet in his view and many others. That, you know, it was between our choices. We're here to make the choice between the evil and the good, evolvement and excess and so on. He was certainly questioning those things ever after, and that was in 1965.
I thought he was kind of a guy given to excesses, Salvador Dali.
No, you see that he's a bit like Saunier in that way. He had a mask, and his mask was the showman. You know, he'd go to the edge. He'd perform, but underneath there was another story going on altogether, which was far more subtle and sensitive.
Girona is, in your opinion, is just sort of this magical place. And for whatever reason, the ley lines that run through, the energy lines that run through it, you stay there for how long?
Well, so I've been there on and off for 50 years.
Okay.
So, and the thing about it is that though on the surface it's changed, it's become global. In, you know, the marketing and the style, the actual truth of the place hasn't changed at all. It's the same. It's got the same energy. It's got the same atmosphere. There is no change I can see, and a lot of other people either. Its heart is as it has always been.
Jose. Is he still with us,
or will I be ruining
the story? Okay, so how does he feel about the fact that you're telling the story now?
That's another matter. I mean, he gave me so much. Because the society was completely in chaos about what they would do with the material. He felt it should be known, and he trusted me because I'd been in Spain. I'd written many, I've written 27 books in all, and I'd written many about Girona. I'd also had a play on in Girona, which had been on in Paris, and I'd written a lot of stuff about the discovery of the Kabbalistic center right in the heart of Girona. And so they trusted me in a way that I was part of their world, but I was also an outsider. So it took someone from outside to tell their story. So I was trusted by quite a few of the group to do this book. Others did not want it told at all. They wanted it hidden in the Vatican. The certain politicians wanted it suppressed and changed and neutered. There must be no discussion about portals or any of the material that, for example, Adolf Hitler was looking for, that a very powerful society existing today is looking for.
Well, let me slow you down right there. So, because you mentioned the Adolf Hitler piece earlier, and I thought that's interesting because that certainly it seems consistent with what we know Heinrich Himmler was up to, sending out agents all around the world, trying to kind of collect all of the talismans and all of the things that might enrich the Third Reich and give them a status. And that Himmler was really into this more than Hitler. But
he went to Girona. Yeah, he did.
Himmler did.
Yeah, and he went to Dali's castle that he had near Figueres in Catalonia. Yeah.
Well, what would Heinrich Himmler have been after?
The Grail.
He was coming after the Grail. Let's talk more about this. So, what is the Grail? What was the Grail? We know what the Da Vinci Code says the Grail was. What was the Grail, and what was the society's relationship with this Grail?
The Grail, as described by them, is the key. It's the transformer. It's what changes from one energy to another. It allows you to open the portal to go through. Without the key, you can't do anything.
Okay. So how do they use it?
I don't think it's an object. As I've understood it, they call it the ritual. The Grail is actually the ritual. It calls forth the lady with the cup. So it's a ritual that calls forth the Magdalena with the cup.
All right,
so
I want you to, I want you, if you can, just present then sort of a timeline. So you, the group would get together in Girona on a given day. Was there like special holidays for this or occasions why they would open up the portal?
Yes, when there were enough initiates, which were of a high enough initiation. And to do that, they had to, I mean, these were people that had to, explore other realms, to set up their nervous system to the pitch of a violin. They would have had to have fasted, to do meditation, breathing for weeks. I mean, they've more or less gone beyond their physical state. They did the same process as the Kabbalists did in the medieval ages. Exactly the same, apparently, that those Jewish mystics did. They went outside of the physical body into the astral plane and other planes.
So they gathered together and just decided, we have enough initiates. We're going to open the portal so that they can see it. So, what, as best as you can figure, what would happen next? It would be the reading of the ritual incantation, or how would they start the process?
They did the ritual. Was very hypnotic in its state, and it shed all earthly, the gravity, the force that held you down, if you like. It shed the body, which we leave when we pass over into the spirit world. Anyway, it's like a crumpled envelope left behind. We go on. So it's a bit like that process, except they have to come back to their bodies, otherwise they can't get in, and then they're gone.
Okay.
The thing about it is that they then experience these amazing vistas and journeys, which I experienced myself in a very small way, that they go into a much vaster, after time, when time is no longer linear, and they pass into these huge states of transformation and change, which many would say, the church would certainly say, is not ours to have. We shouldn't be doing this. Come back masters. They would come back, we would say, masters of the universe, I suppose. And that's why probably Hitler and Himmler and many others were after this material.
Wanted this power. Mm-hmm. So would they change physically? Would they leave their physical space?
Yes.
And stay corporeal?
Yes. They would leave their space. So their etheric body would go forward. Their physical body would remain where it was.
Okay. So their body would stay the same.
Yeah. It would be where it was. It was
But their etheric body would then begin to travel. Would they have... This sounds like a naive question, but since time isn't linear, would they have other relationships in these other dimensions?
Definitely.
Might they be married? Might they be fathers, mothers, whatever, another dimension?
Yes. They would go back into different incarnations, but that would be the mere personal, small side of it. And then they would go into the much bigger archetype energies and vistas beyond their own personal realm around this particular. I think of this planet as the suburbs of the universe, incidentally, but I'm thinking of a much bigger state altogether, but we're not there yet. We'd be eaten up by gravity if we were, probably. But they go thousands of, well, if we're talking figures, numbers, it's like going through a wormhole. I mean, the scientists would describe it as going in, just going through a wormhole. You're suddenly there, you're in another frame altogether. Those places they can reach, and they can come back and describe. So it's not expunged from them because they've come back to here. They bring it back. And likewise, spirits, entities can come through to us.
So as you experienced it, at least by extension, with the people you know who were going through that, would they change with every time they would go through the portal, or would there just be sort of like an achievement of this level of mastery, and then after that they were pretty much the same, or were they always
sort of the same person? They came back with different look in their eyes, a different way of experiencing their existence here. It was a complete change.
So as Himmler was coming for this information, did he know that the Holy Grail was a ritual and not an object?
I don't know.
Okay.
That I don't know.
It wasn't part of the...
I know he came. I know that Hitler also came down to the Pyrenees. It's all around the Pyrenees area, the mountain range between
sure.
France and Spain. That I don't know. Mm.
Well, the reason I ask was just because some of our frame of reference for this comes from, some sources it can't always rely on. So I didn't know whether there was anything empirical that the group had said that they had to hide anybody or they had to hide anything during that period.
They had to hide people quite often. Yes, they certainly did.
Who would they be hiding?
Well,
and
first
why?
Of all, the predecessor to Saunier from Rennes-la-Château was Abbé Antoine Bigoux. He was the one who really started the Rennes-la-Château story, and he had to leave just before the French Revolution. He had a relationship with the Habsburg family who funded Saunier later on, and he went, where did he go? He went straight over to Girona, and he took with him certain material, but it was never always in Rennes-la-Château. It was partially in Girona, partially in Rennes-la-Château. That's as I understand it. After he came over, nothing was in Rennes-la-Château except the four scrolls saying where to find it. He
right.
came over to Girona, and he was secreted in a place called Palera near Besalú, which is a chapel. In the middle of a private chapel, in the middle of the forest. He was held, well, he was kindly kept, they're not held there. And they moved him because the Napoleonic War came up after that in 1810. It's unclear when he died, but whether they moved him or buried him there, I don't know. But the material was then moved because of the Napoleonic War, and it was moved to another site. It was always difficult to find the place to put the material. And then they had the tower, which was built in 1851 in Girona, attached to the house, which had always belonged to the canons of the church, was the Black Cemetery. That's where the tower was. That's where the hiding place or the safe place for all the material was in that neo-Gothic tower.
And so where, I mean, we know that's where that is, but who are there people then that still maintain the grail? Are they grail keepers that have this ritual, that know this information?
Yes.
Are they still opening up portals in
yes,
around
I'm
Girona?
Sure they are. Yes, they are. Yes, as far as I know, they certainly are. There's a lot of scientists have kind of got into it now. They're very interested in measuring. I mean, there's been a lot of measuring of portals, some being beneficent, some being dangerous, some being not to be approached at all. And they're surrounded apparently by very negative matter, which if you step into that energy, you feel unwell, you don't feel very good, so you don't return there. So it keeps that portal safe. Some portals, if you went near them to without proper preparation, you'd be swallowed up and gone. So it's become a bit, because of the journey, because the ritual journey has now become available. That's come out now since I wrote the book. I wasn't allowed to put this in the book, incidentally, but this is one of the things that they suppressed. But the ritual journey is incredibly interesting because it starts in Girona, and they have all the symbols, which are partly Kabbalah and partly pre-Kabbalah. And
okay.
I don't know anything about these.
Well, let's sort that out then coming up in our last half hour then.
Okay.
I'd love to be able to do that. Patrice Chaplin telling the story of City of Secrets, which is available for purchase in the United States now after being successfully printed in Europe. And now telling the whole story that the editor said, you know what, you're going to want to leave out this part. And let's trim this part over here. She's telling us everything, and it's just fascinating. You can link up to her through coasttocoastam.com. Grab my blog while you're there, too. Some great stories. We never ended up getting up on the air at coasttocoastam.com. Last half hour next. This is Ian Punnett. You got to link up to Patrice Chaplin through our website at coasttocoastam.com. Just look at the amount that she's had published and done over the years, the plays, the novels, the nonfiction books. This is an accomplished writer who's telling perhaps her greatest story in City of Secrets. And we'll get back to this here coming up in just a minute. The last couple of secrets, perhaps, before we have to call it a night on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So we're talking about the author of City of Secrets, as well as the story that's contained and the story that's not contained in City of Secrets. And thank you, Patrice Chaplin, for being so kind to kind of go outside the margins on the story. When you said earlier that you thought that there were kind of forces that were working together to keep the whole story from coming out. Even though they were publishing the story, they were saying, nah, you can't put that out there. Go back over that for me. Who was telling you that you couldn't tell the whole story?
Well, to begin with, to get closer to the story, it would be the publishers. And halfway through, they changed it, and they took out a lot of the material about the portals that had to come out, and the journey to the portals, the initiation ceremonies. And I was told, well, you know, people are not going to understand that. In Spain,
what was that they couldn't understand? They didn't think.
They wouldn't understand transformation going into other areas that the portal, which was all powerful, existed. There's certain things about the money exchanges with the Habsburg family had to be kept out of it. There were things taken out, which afterwards I thought, well, they're very important to the story. Why have they gone? Well, they've gone because lots of people didn't want them in, and right, lots of them were in Spain. They were certainly in the religious sector. We go to Rome there, you know.
Well, but who would censor that from Spain? How would they attempt to do that? What did they contact your publisher? Did they contact you?
Yes, I'm sure. And so it changed halfway. And when the material became known in Spain, what was actually available, because I was given, Jose gave me one part of the story and some letters, but I had to go and get research. I mean, it wasn't just given to me. I had to go and find it, a lot of it. And the letters, the documents were the, as soon as I got to those, that's when things started to change. The letters were definitely about the process that Saunier went through, why he came to Girona, what he was searching for, how the clergy took to him or did not. And he had a lot of money to spend. And if you think about it, in those days, Girona was a city. It was a transitory city. People passed through to Barcelona. It wasn't an important city, and the people were not wealthy. I mean, here was someone coming with a lot of money, and he was buying silence. And also the fact that this material could come out, you know, and the journey to the portal could be in the hands of other people. This was not acceptable. Okay. And as I said to you, it's under a Venus magic square, and it's got all these numbers, and each place that you pass through has a number, and it has documentation. You see, the documentation is Kabbalistic and pre-Kabbalistic, so there are extraordinary descriptions of each place which you have to absorb and take in. It's a very active process.
So we know that much about the ritual, as you've been able to tell us, that the ritual was the grail, and that the ritual that was performed would open the portal, which would then produce the lady with the cup, which you believe was Mary Magdalene. What would happen when the lady would appear with the cup?
What I understood was that the, and this was witnessed by hundreds of people in Girona on February the 4th, 1976. That's the one I heard a lot about, which it was very much like a powerful healing experience. You could hear a pin drop, literally. The only sound was a dog barking. There was the other thing they said, there was a smell of perfume, which was unlike any they'd ever known. And this is dozens of people, hundreds of people, that the effect was very much like over the mountain in Lourdes with Bernadette Soubeyras, you know, who had the vision there. And
right.
Also, afterwards, the fountain, which had never, ever worked, or they didn't even know it was there, began to produce water. So there was a change in the actual structure of the earth where the vision had appeared. Mm. And also, the number, they used all the Kabbalistic and ancient numbers for the different sites where the portals were, and Girona is very important because it's called Dales, and then it's number 4, which means doorway or portal. So that was also part of what was going on around the time of the vision, the discovery of that.
But specifically in that sense, that then when the Magdalene appeared with the cup,
yes.
Was there anything that the people who were in the ritual had to do? Was there language that they used? Was there something that they were expected to do to interact with the Magdalene?
What Jose said, because he was present and he has been in the rituals, he said that the ritual, and indeed the Kabbalist said the same because he was also present, is that the ritual calls up the lady with the cup, but you can't tell where she's going to come to appear. Mm. So in fact, what happened, she appeared further away where she was seen by the public, which was not the intention at all. I mean, the last thing they wanted was a great, with droves of people suddenly asking questions about this phenomenon which they'd seen before. They didn't, so they had to close it down, in fact, after that. But the fact, when they were doing the ritual, they had to use attunement and breathing, and their nervous system had to be of a certain strength and power, or they couldn't do it. If the actual quality of those initiates was not high enough, nothing would happen. I mean, they could do everything they wanted. It depended on the quality of the initiate. It wasn't on the ritual itself.
Why didn't you qualify at any point to be an initiate?
They never asked me.
Well, I understand, but why was it a sexist thing? Was it, do they only ask men? Or was it, did you not give off a vibe that said, because it seems like you'd be a perfect candidate for that?
Well, thank you. I'm glad to hear it. But no, I mean, I was never asked. I was a writer. I was not an esoteric. I was never an esoteric person. I mean, I have certain gifts myself in the clairvoyant world, let's say. But I mean, I wasn't considered. I was
evolved enough.
These were people who, they were trained, they were initiated, they were evolved in a place called Ripoll, which is in the mountains, about an hour or two from Girona. And they trained there for months. I mean, they weren't, you know, you had to put an awful lot of work into
it. Sure. What could they do? Could they do anything different? I mean, were they, after you said they came back after several of these time travel experiences, and they were changed, and they were, exhibited a kind of a level of mastery, were they able to do anything in the present? Could Jose, did he have any special, for lack of a better word, powers?
I mean, yes, he did, especially in his expression, and the way he spoke, the way he could change things by what he said in the city. He stopped a lot of the destruction of the old part. He brought back the old rituals of the Catalan community. He enhanced life there. Most things he did was positive. A Russian conductor, musical conductor, he started using. He came back and he was in Girona for quite a while, and he started using the note F sharp sustained. Sustained meaning it carried on.
Right.
Sharp, and it transformed objects and material matter.
Huh.
So, I mean, there were, let's say, transformation in a way. There was a lot more people could give healing, but there was a general sense that you weren't supposed in any way to take away people's experience that they have here on this earth plane. I mean, you're not supposed to get them out of things they have to go through. You're denying them what they're supposed to do here, their choice,
right,
their journey. So they weren't allowed to do magic tricks.
Hmm.
But that would be... you say something more about the portal, because I know you mentioned it earlier, and I mean, what I understood was it is an energy point where the time and space change. That was, it's like a sort of change point. And
right,
everything that has happened collects there. So everything in the vicinity collects in the portal so that you go back in time and you go forward. That's the thing that they taught me about it. And if you're not an initiate, you were advised not to do it.
In the Da Vinci Code and in other stories that focus on Rennes-le-Château or on the cult around Rennes-le-Château in France and I guess by extension now Girona in Spain, but I've never heard that mentioned before. But as people talk about the society, there is a sexual element to that that's often talked about. Can you comment on that? Was there...
No.
Is that nothing about that in the cult of the secret society or anything like that?
No, okay. No, not at all. Mm-mm.
Okay. Were they less inclined? Were they more celibate? Was that anything? Did it go the other direction?
I would have thought some people had gone probably beyond the, you know, the kind of sexual looking for, you know, a high fix there. I think they were going into probably more sublime estates. Yes, I think, yes, I would have thought that that wasn't the whole story for them. But I can't, I never heard really about that so much. I did hear a lot, which I must mention, that the portal held was the unmanifest Messiah. That was the key to it.
The whole thing. The portal contained the unmanifested Messiah?
Yes. Mm. Yes.
Okay, you have to be more specific on what that means, because you mentioned that the Magdalene would come through, but how would they be in touch with the unmanifested Messiah?
I don't know. That I can't answer. I don't know it, but I know that the portal on Canigou, which is number 7, each portal had a number, which had a Kabbalistic or pre-Kabbalistic reference. So that Girona is number 43, which makes 7, and Canigou is 7, and it's for them Canigou represents the portal of Canigou has within it represents the unmanifest Messiah, but to get to that you have to get lost and to die. And then you recollect, unite and join and accumulate, and always the main key thing was you had to unite the north and the south, and the towers, just to go back to those, was the north one, which was in Rennes-le-Château, the south was in Spain, and the south always disappears and the north remains. These were the things that I was taught on that journey.
Would, with all of this talk about, you know, Mary Magdalene or the sort of unexpressed Messiah, would the members of the society have considered themselves to be Christian?
No.
How did they relate to this very Christian material then?
Well, I saw that they, for them, the Magdalene was beyond a Christian symbol. She, I mean, probably for them, Jesus would be seen as well as an archetype. I mean, okay. In this area, I can't really get, you know, I can only really talk about what I've witnessed.
Sure.
Rather than what they think, because a lot of what they think is recorded in documents. And I would say that for them, the Magdalene links up with a much older figure than the Magdalene accompanying Jesus. And there was no question ever of any discussion about the Magdalene and Jesus being married and having a child, all of that. That was never, ever recorded. I mean, not that, you know, people have different views of it, but
right.
None of that was ever talked about, no.
Actually, I was going to ask you about that, too. So they aren't part of that tradition that maintains that Jesus escaped from crucifixion and came with Mary Magdalene and their child to France.
No, they're not. No, they are not.
That was not part of
this secret society. They never talk about it. That's not even of interest to them. So it seems like it goes much further back, that the Magdalene has an existence, another form, much further back than the Judeo-Christian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely
era.
More Christian than Judo. Then
yeah.
Does the Jesus story for them, did it end at the cross? You mentioned that the Messiah was in a state of kind of in an unexpressed state in the portal. Was that saying that waiting for a quote unquote second coming? Or was that part of some other larger issue that I can't quite follow?
Well, the basic thing was that Jesus was a precursor of the unmanifest Messiah who would come through the portal. We can't sort of say, if I've said he's in there, I better change my story there, because I know he comes through the portal, but until the world is ready, the unmanifest Messiah will not appear. And part of what the work of Saunier and the societies all the way going back was to make the preparation for the arrival of the unmanifest, which is waiting, but we're not ready to receive. But there's an indication from the material that pre the fall, long, you know, before pre-times, like, prehistory, there was other entities which entered our existence here, which were very beneficial to us. Mm. And they retreated as dark energies came forward. So we were going through some light and dark times before we ever started thinking about any of this material, ancient Egypt and so on, and then the Sumerians.
Well, it's been very interesting talking with you, and I'll just ask you if you can give me a 30-second answer on this because I'm running out of time. But so, to your knowledge, that secret society in Girona, Spain, is still active and still maintaining their guardianship over these portals in the Pyrenees.
Yes.
Very interesting. Well, and for more, I refer everybody to the book City of Secrets. Go take a look online at coasttocoastam.com and link up to Patrice Chaplin. Thank you so much for answering all our questions and for giving it such a fascinating reveal of the things that are and aren't in the book. And I wish you the best of luck with that, too. And thank you so much for spending the time that you did with us this evening.
Thank you very much, Ian. It's been a pleasure. Really has.
Okay. God bless you.
We'll
leave it there for now and just say that before we speak again, you will have had Friday the 13th on your horizon and then Valentine's Day. Try to do them both right. If you've got a Valentine's Day spirit to share with somebody, please do. And then even if you don't have a Valentine's, it's always nice to be a secret admirer and help make the day special for somebody. And don't be spooked out by superstition. Whatever the case is, we'll be back on Saturday on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Deus te amat, and I do too.